Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jordan Gonzalez. As you may know, I am the host of the podcast Placer Filosófico. It is a pleasure for me that you are listening to this episode from the deepest of my heart. I am very thankful. Today I have the honor of introducing you to Venette Duroc, a lady that has made all her way from Canada to Mexico. And as she said, she came here to own her 50s. She said that it is possible on our way to aging to do the things we haven't done while growing up or while we are young. So she says she's proving to every soul that's growing up that it is possible to live the life that you always dream, even if you are old. So follow me through this episode and listen to a history that comes with drama, a lot of religion, restriction, not knowing who you are, and escaping reality to fix your own reality. Welcome to the show. Enjoy. So you was growing in the farm. You had a big family. Is it?
I wouldn't call it a big family. I was raised with two sisters.
Two sisters.
Yeah.
So you don't have a boys, brothers?
No, and that actually kind of played out in our family dynamics. So my older sister and my younger sister were a lot more feminine than I was, even as children. I was always kind of the tomboy. I was the person who kind of filled the role of maybe what a boy would have.
Okay.
So
okay.
I was in there doing everything I could. I was not afraid of hard work.
And how was the open-mindedness of the people there?
Closed. Was very religious. There was church twice a week, and then there were meetings throughout the week, so it was very religious. And it was an obey culture. You did what was expected to you. You were seen, not heard. Obey, obey, obey was a word you heard an awful lot about.
Did you feel comfortable in that situation growing there, like in your teenage times, like when you had the hormones growing up and you're gonna have a boyfriend? How does it feel?
Boyfriends, oh, I don't
how
know about
those.
It, it was oppressive. It was a very oppressive culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think my sisters had an easier time navigating it because they were more likely to please my parents than I was. I was probably a free spirit not long after I was born. I suspect, based on what I've heard, I was out to explore the world. I probably was never going to be the good, diligent child that obeyed.
But even then, you spent there like a long time?
I remained in the family home till I was 16, and then at 16 I left.
Oh, you left at 16?
Yeah.
And when you were out, where did you go?
The first place I went to was a home, an apartment in a small town with my grandmother to care for my grandmother after my grandfather's passing. That was a bit interesting. I was introduced to small town living and amenities and things that I hadn't had very much proximity to out in the farm because the farm was quite remote.
So you had a farm living, which means there is not many people.
Not many people.
And then you moved to a smaller, a bigger town.
An apartment. I go from a house out in the middle of nowhere to an apartment in a town.
It's the same history as me, you know? Same.
That's interesting. Why did we not talk about this before?
I grew in the middle of nowhere, walked 1 hour to go to the school. And then when I was 12, we moved to another bigger town, but still small.
Yes.
And then I moved to the city when I was 18. But I think all the experience you had is kind of the same, but
yeah.
I'm a man, no? I'm a boy. So I got the preference.
You had more freedom, probably,
yeah,
than
absolutely.
I would have had.
Yeah.
Although my grandmother was adjusting like I was because she also lived at that farm until we both moved together at the same time. So we were both, she, who was probably in her 60s at the time, she and I were both kind of going through a brand new exposure to a different kind of life. So we were kind of doing it together.
Does she have the same personality as you? Like,
No.
conservative? Is she conservative?
She was a fairly quiet woman. She had fairly high expectations. She could be, she could be pretty direct at times. I thought the world of her. I thought she was a really good woman.
Okay. And then when you were 16, did you stop being religious?
I think I was becoming opposed to the idea of the obey culture. by that point. I was wanting to experience all the things that my peers were doing. I ended up going to a public high school in another city, and in that city was a bigger city. And so the kids were doing things like socializing, going to parties and all of those things. And I had never been allowed to do those things. But never mind none of the drinking that they were doing. You weren't allowed to drink. I mean, there was an awful lot of rules that I was raised with. I started to want to do those things. And as I started to want to do those things, it created a greater rift in the relationship with my family.
But did you fit well in the high school?
No, no, because I was an oddball country girl trying to fit in with all these kind of city kids.
You had your boots on.
Well, no, I don't know that I came with the boots, but I definitely wasn't rocking the city trends in my clothing. Okay. Yeah, you could tell. I stuck out for sure. And I was way more independent than a lot of the other girls that I would be going to school with, because I was used to doing an awful lot of stuff by myself, whereas city girls, teenage girls, have their dads help them with their cars or whatever they need to do. Daddy's there to do that for them, or brother. That's not how I grew up. I grew up, something needed to be done. You did it. And so I didn't fit. It just didn't work. Fit. No.
But you survive?
Sure. We all do. We come out better for it.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah. It's just a piece of my life that I kind of have no feelings about one way or another, just part of the journey.
Okay, okay. And when you get married, what age happened, and how you choose the men? Because I think we when we have this life, we carry the patterns, you know?
Yeah.
We don't really get liberated of those ideas we have in the background or the head. Not in the conscient, but in the inconscient.
I was first introduced to him, I think, when I was 14 or 15. It was just expected that I would marry him, that I couldn't have done anything else. So when we got married, we got along really well. I don't think that either one of us would say it was anything more than a good business partnership. That's what it seemed like. And it was fine. We had two children, and for a good amount of the years, it worked. We moved around quite often, and at one point we kind of reached a point where we felt like the religious upbringing and the behavior of our, especially mine, I'm going to say my family, was too oppressive for what we want our kids to be opposed to. So we decided to kind of remove ourselves entirely. So we closed the doors with my family and started fresh, just myself and my ex-husband now and our two children. And there, most of the time, it was a good partnership. Most of the time, it was good.
But what happened, though? Because now you tell me that your children judge the way of you want to live.
Yeah. Well, you know,
you have changed.
I have. I was, for the entire marriage, homemaker. I stayed at home with the kids. I did that until the kids were old enough to drive. That was kind of what we had agreed on.
Oh, you agreed on that?
Oh, yes. Husband and I agreed that I would stay home with the children and be there for them, provide transportation, anything that they needed during the day. I would work nights and weekends to offset any additional income that we wanted.
But was it a happy marriage? In the sense that it was love, good sex, good communication?
I don't think there was love. I don't think there was love.
Not good sex either.
We did manage to have a good sex life for a good amount of the relationship.
Wow, that's okay. Okay,
because
you guys did that.
Yeah, and I mean, if everybody's really honest with themselves, and if they could be really comfortable with their own bodies, there are an awful lot of benefits to having those sexual needs satisfied. It's a huge stress reliever at times if you allow yourself to chill out and just roll with it. It works. So that part, with our physical interaction together, when we were intimate, it was fine. I had no complaints, and I don't think he would say he did either. So we made that part work. And I don't think either one of us understood that we were missing the love factor, because we didn't know that we were missing it. We just lived it. It wasn't until we came out of the relationship that I think either one of us went, wow, that was just business.
Shit.
Yes, that's kind of, and for me, it was very shocking. There was an awful lot of stuff that I didn't see while I was in the relationship until after I came out of the relationship with him. And I was so lucky that I was surrounded by a office of social workers and legal representatives to sit down with me and say, we've been waiting for this day because you have been living this for so long, you don't even know that what you're living was not okay. You didn't know, and we want to tell you, but we want to work with you in a way that you don't start to beat yourself up for not having realized.
So everyone could see it.
Oh, yes.
Not
yeah,
you.
I didn't. Didn't know there was anything different. Never knew.
Was he religious?
No, no, he was not. He was not. His family was definitely a little bit different. They were dysfunctional and they had a lot of mental health issues. So he didn't really have close bonds with his family either. My ex-husband, for the most part, was just happy to go to work, come home, watch television, and have a few beers. That was his life. He was happy with that. And I was happy being the mom. That was cool. How it worked. Yeah. So it was okay.
Wow. So after the kids learned to drive,
yep.
You said, you know, the business finished.
No, after the kids learned to drive, we sat down and talked about the fact that I did have a three-year education. I know it was a two-year education in policing. So I already had that foundation from when I was quite young. We decided that I would return to school and take law and go into legal practice. So I was 44 when I went back to school. And I was practicing in December of 2013 at the age of 46, I think. I was hired before I even wrote my final exam with the Law Society. So it was amazing. I had a really good run.
And in that time, you were already divorced?
No, I was still married, but that became a bit of a challenge because when we decided that I was going to go back and end up doing the education to practice law, we actually joked about the fact, ha ha ha, we better not get divorced. We joked about that at the time the decision was made. Unfortunately, the way it all unfolded, the relationship soured very, very quickly. And unfortunately, I did have to use the skills and the resources that I learned in law school to navigate the divorce. And it was not pretty. It was not pretty. It actually ended up destroying our family and our relationships with our children.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's unfortunate.
But those things happen. I have friends, ex-girlfriends, who live through a parent's divorce, and it can be traumatic, mostly when they are young, no? Young. Mm-hmm. When they're a little older, is actually not a problem. But when they're young, yeah. Wow.
It can be ugly. It can be ugly. It was a stressful, I guess there was about three or four years after the actual date of separation that were really, really stressful, just because there was a lot of drama going on that really shouldn't have been going on at that point in time.
But isn't it just like, okay, you know what? We are old enough. We can do whatever we want. And goodbye. Take your time here. Everything is okay. Isn't it like that?
Well, that's how it should be.
No?
That's not how it was. But that's
not when
how
it's
it
not
be.
Like that, it's because there is emotions in the way.
Well, yeah. And in our case, going back to some of the old school thinking. So the old school thinking in North America, and specifically the communities that we came from, men were the breadwinners and women stayed at home, and there was no value placed on the work that the wife did in the home, caring for the family, even though we were up and working actually longer hours than our partners who were leaving the house to work.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't given any credit. And so when you try to divide the assets in that situation, you've got a husband who thinks, I worked and I made all the money, therefore all the assets belong to me. And then you've got the spouse on the other side saying, but the work that I did at home was still work, and that deserves to be financially compensated too. In my case, my ex actually, I knew it was going to be bad when he handed me a spreadsheet of our income comparisons over the course of our marriage and basically said that he wanted me to walk away without getting fair equalization. And at that point, I just said, I don't think we can have this conversation. I think you need to go and get a consult, or speak with a therapist to help you determine what's a reasonable expectation in terms of financial outcomes and sharing of assets and things like that, because you can't hear that from me right now. I know you're not open to that. So I want you to go and do that. And he did. He actually did do that. And then he spent the next year stealing our money. He came back and told me that he wanted to salvage the marriage. While he was salvaging the marriage, he opened safety deposit boxes and was just hiding things in there. And it was, yeah, he did some special stuff. But it's all based on the idea of that old school thinking. Men made the money. Men get to take all the money. Even if the mom stayed at home and worked all day with the children, raising the children. And then in my case, after he got home from work and everybody was fed, I went to work. I went out and I worked for another 4 hours, 6 hours or whatever. And then I worked all weekend. That didn't matter. He did the work that I did at home had no financial value. So that's that old school thinking that really kind of factored into how things unfolded during our divorce.
Wow. So it's crazy how things are the same in that matter in Mexico, in North America, everywhere.
Yeah, it's a cultural, it's a generational thing. It's all attached to our generation, how we were taught and raised. And though the cultures between Canada and Mexico could be quite different, there are some things that are very similar all the way along. I bet you if you looked all across the world, you would see this piece of...
You're telling me, I hear it before.
Yeah.
It's like women doesn't have the real place. I hear this from women. So maybe...
Men, I've had some interesting conversations with men about this. And they are coming from really a feeling that they work very, very hard. Working out of the house means you work hard. Working in the house means that you don't. They picture the spouses, that the moms or whoever is staying home, they picture them hanging out with the kids, having a grand old time, eating bonbons, watching TV.
Scrolling Instagram now.
Scrolling, yeah, TikTok. TikTok. We didn't have TikTok back then. But anyway, that's what they picture. And I understand that because that's how they spend their time when they're with the children. To be honest, that is how they spend the time because the wife has done all the other stuff. So that when they have that one-on-one time with the children, there's no work to be done. We've done it already for them.
My gosh.
So I understand how that mindset worked. I get it. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It results in a lot of anger and bitterness.
So that's why there is a lot of business for lawyers
when it comes to divorces. Lawyers hate doing family law.
Do they?
Oh, they hate it. They hate it. Family law is nasty.
Is it?
Yes.
More than corporate.
People would rather do corporate over family or criminal any day. Yeah, family is one of the lowest picked. Yeah. Family's dicey. I wouldn't touch family for all the tea in China.
No.
Yeah.
Wow. But you like it low. I mean, you enjoy it.
Well, the type of law that I was practicing helped people who were impoverished. So I could see that the work that I was doing had some real benefits to the people I was working for.
So it fulfilled you.
Yes. It was fulfilling, but more importantly, I wanted to do something that was positive for the future, not just today. Mm-hmm. And I saw the work that I was doing as having some value in the long term for people and for families. And that was my goal in my life has kind of always been to leave a positive footprint wherever I can. Mm-hmm, and footprint meaning that it's long lasting and survives my death. That's kind of how
a legacy.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's a little bit arrogant.
It's a legacy. It's a little bit like that, but people are not going to remember my name. They're just going to remember that lady that did. They probably won't remember my name.
But that's what the wise men say, the philosopher, they say. Once you die, it's like it passed a year, 2 years, and then nobody talks about you anymore.
No.
It's like a flesh in the air.
And I'm not so delusional that I don't know that that's true. I mean, honestly, a lot of people that would bother, and my logic on that is once I'm dead, my brain's not thinking about any of this stuff. It doesn't matter.
It's crazy, you know? It's crazy. Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff that we worry about surrounding the death topic that in my mind, and maybe I'm a little bit over-logical about this, but... like how people want things done for their funerals and all of these things that they're very particular. I understand that it's really important for some people to have things just so.
Uh-huh.
I'm just not one of them.
Well, it doesn't really matter because you don't know anything when you're there.
I'm dead. What do I care?
It's true. Eh?
That's how I feel.
It's true. Eh? So now you have told me a little bit of your life. What is the meaning of life for you?
Oh, the meaning of life. That's a tough question. I think the meaning of life for me is traveling a path in a way that does the best I can to influence the lives of others for the good while doing the least amount of damage that I can.
Doing damage is kind of inevitable.
I know, and it bugs me. Yeah, there used to be a time when I used to really avoid people because I was worried about whether or not I would hurt them. I still have that in me a little bit, that I struggle with not wanting to upset people. And that probably goes back to childhood, and a psychologist would do wonders with me. So I still worry about upsetting people all the time. But I'm getting better all the time at understanding what is my issue and what is not my issue. Because
by getting to know yourself.
By getting to know myself and also learning better critical thinking skills. Then I understand that those skills are essential because, I mean, part of how you solve problems is to identify, all right, is this my problem? Do I have a problem? Maybe I don't even have a problem. Maybe this is somebody else's problem that doesn't even have anything to do with me and I should just stay out of it. Once you identify whether or not you have a problem to solve, then you can start to dissect how you need to solve the problem. But I would say, and for a lot of us, there's a good amount of time where we're solving problems that aren't ours. And one of the things that I would include in that is hurt feelings. Sometimes we say things that have no intent to hurt another person, and the words themselves are not hurtful, but the other person may get hurt because of the journey they've already traveled. And there's times where I have to remember that's their journey that brought them to the pain. It's not my words.
But how do you do it? How you get to be sure that it's not your problem and it's the other people's problem? Because we take this a lot. Yeah, like it's kind of often you have a situation where you blame yourself for the situation.
Oh yes.
Yeah, it's either you blame yourself or sometimes you are narcissistic and you mm-hmm. really don't take any blame, you know. There is this kind of people also.
Well, I think everybody has a narcissistic side to them. I think people throw around the word narcissistic and try to label a person as being entirely narcissistic. If we're going to be really honest with ourselves, everybody is capable of narcissistic actions.
Uh-huh.
It's how we manage ourselves and our responses to somebody pointing out, whoa, that was a slightly narcissistic behavior.
Have you find yourself in a situation like that? Like say, shit, I have been here. Because I imagine, I see you, beautiful woman, and I know what. It's not that I say I'm so beautiful, you know. Maybe say, well, you know, when you have this kind of presence and this energy, people get yellow sometimes, you know, around when you feel the things and sometimes can get offended, you know. How do you manage like this? Or have you have a situation where you find yourself being like too much owning yourself?
You mean too full of myself?
Mm.
No, actually. Not for the most part. And I think the reason for that is because maybe some insecurities and some personality traits. So I am typically shy by nature or introverted by nature. In practicing law, I'm a forced extrovert. And
yeah, because you gotta.
Yeah, you gotta walk in like you own it. And mm-hmm, there was, because I was working in the not-for-profit industry, there was lots of fundraising events and galas and things like that, and that I had to present myself with nothing but full confidence and ensure that I had the attention of as many people as I possibly could in the room to achieve the goal of promoting a program, whether it's financial fundraising or program development. I needed their attention. So I needed to get comfortable, even though I don't want to be the center of attention. I needed to get real and figure out how to do it in a hurry and do it well. And I did. I could do that. But when it's done, holy smokes, I want that glass of wine in a hurry. That's the reality of that. Because that's somebody who knows me really well could be watching me going, ha ha ha, she's probably freaking.
Yeah.
But if you don't know me well, you'd think that I had that charismatic.
You got the power in everything.
I would come off uber confident. What tells me how I'm doing with people is how people respond to me. women especially. So what?
Yeah, how is
they're
that?
They're great. You would think, as a woman my age, that it has still has good features, and I'm somehow managing to keep myself in good shape at this age. You would think that that would come with some bitterness and resentment from women, because women, let's face it, can be kind of catty.
Yeah, that's what I meant before.
That can be. Uh-huh. Somehow that's never happened to me. Somehow I have the women in my life and the women I've encountered have been nothing more than supportive, uplifting.
They haven't been an ego
There's been nothing. They've just been so beautiful. One of the biggest compliments that I feel I can have is if I'm walking down the street, if a woman stops me on the street and says, "Girl, you knocked this outfit out of the park," that's a bigger compliment to me than it ever come from a man.
Yeah.
To me, that's bigger.
Yeah.
Because women they can be a tough audience.
I've seen examples.
Yeah, but I think somehow there's something in my personality that is warm enough and maybe inviting enough that people
humble.
Maybe. I don't know. I've never been really good at self reflection in terms of how do people see me. I don't know how people see me. I'm just kind of a lot of time just guessing. But I do have people tell me that I'm very easy to talk to.
Well, you have get this that people call you a MILF?
Yeah, the MILF thing. That's a different thing. That's a whole different conversation. So, funny story, haha. I was still married the first time that I heard the word MILF. My daughter had a male friend in the house, and my husband was in the kitchen with me, and she brings this guy into the house, and he's a good kid. I like him just fine. And he said something about, "Well, you know, your mom's a MILF, so what do you expect?" And my husband was there and his behavior changed, but I didn't really know why. And I didn't know what MILF was. And
you didn't know what MILF was?
I didn't know what MILF was.
Okay.
So I'm
so
just
you probably
trying to
smile.
I didn't want to come off as being stupid in front of this boy.
Okay.
I was in law school at the time, so I sent one of my classmates a message, "Hey, what is MILF?" And all I got back was, "Ha ha 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 ha," and no answer. "We'll talk in school." That was the response I got. And then they told me what it was. And I thought, oh, Lord, I don't know how I feel about that, because that's tough. That's kind of like saying, you know, "I think your mom's hot." And I don't know how my teenage kids are going to feel like knowing their friends think I'm hot. When the divorce happened, that became a huge issue. And it really became tough for my daughter, especially, to navigate. And my heart always broke for her on this one, because I was quite thin, always been kind of thin and thin boned, and she was a little heavier than I was. And I noticed that as she was hearing more and more and more, as I was single, more and more and more from the boys about what they thought of her mom, that she became very critical of my body and started putting down my body. She was insulting it. And what I realized after kind of walking a mile in her shoes is that she's sick and tired of dudes telling her they want to get with her mom instead of her. She's not hearing it. She's hearing them say they want to get with me. And when I really understood what that was, how that had to be like, it crushed me a bit. And I insisted after that it not happen again. Although I did have one young boy who decided on Christmas morning. He lived about, I was out in the farm, so it's maybe about a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
I know who his parents are. He sent me a message Christmas morning. "Will you have sex with me?" He was
the friend of your daughter?
The boy, a neighborhood boy.
Okay.
The neighborhood boy, friends of hers, lived a mile away.
Okay.
I know his parents. He would, like maybe 16 at the time, 17.
Okay.
He might have been a bit older, but anyway, young enough that it really wasn't appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at it and I thought, okay, I need to send a message out to these kids that this is not okay. So I just forwarded the message to his mom.
Wow.
And I said, "I'm sorry.
Yuck.
I need to make sure that we bring a hard end to this, because this is not how I want these young men looking at me." And that was the last time I ever heard from him or anybody in that family, as far as that goes.
Of course.
I just thought, no, I'm not having this. It's too early in the morning for this. But anyway, so that's what I did with that. And then as soon as I then started putting up some pretty strong walls and just not being present when the kids had their friends around, of course it improved. But as I continued to move on in my life and they moved, they went to college, university, wherever they were going, I was surprised to find that the level of interest from young men didn't end there. It was shocking, the number of young men that are interested in women my age.
Do you enjoy that? I mean,
I've
the attention.
No, I've never tried.
No, no, but I mean the attention.
Oh, the attention from young men. No, not really.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because I look at every one of them, think you could be my kid. So.
Oh, you see it in that way.
Yeah. So my mind, like, there was quite a few that were kind of close to anything within a 5-year range of my kid's age. Is like, no, that's like my kid's age. Couldn't go to that round. I've never actually had any kind of flirtation with anybody ever younger than me.
Okay, so you keep the age limit.
Yeah, and it's not really intended because I haven't done a heck of a lot of dating since the divorce. But it's just kind of in terms of having conversation and things like that, I probably am more likely to have engaging conversation who is somebody who's either my intellectual equal or somebody who is at least at the same stage or close to the same stage in life that I am at. I have met some young men that actually are my intellectual equals, and I don't mean that to sound arrogant. It's just that men generally don't want to sit and have an intellectual conversation. They want to talk about sports and cars and things like that. And I kind of want to explore some deeper, maybe some uncomfortable things.
Can you call yourself sapiosexual?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I would, in terms of being attracted to another person, I don't care what they look like. If they've got my brain, they've got all of me.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Well, that's interesting, yeah.
Yes, I'm unique that way.
But is it hard for you to find your level of intellectuality on men? Is it hard? Like, obviously you get the attention of men. You walk in the street and work environment or whatever, you get the attention, and there will always be someone who want to either have sex with you, have
yes.
a conversation with you, take yeah. you on a date or marry it, you know.
Yeah.
So is it hard for you to use filter, make the filter?
No, I can see the difference pretty quickly, but I suppose maybe experience has gotten me that far.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think of the men that I'm going to encounter, most of them are pretty obvious in their first few minutes of engaging with you. They let on. They have signals that tell you that, bam, I think she's hot. That's what's going through the brain. And I mean, you can see them doing the head-to-toe scan, and you can, they...
But isn't that natural?
It's natural to an extent, but I think, and I'm trying to share this with men, I'm trying to educate men. It's natural. Physiologically, men are driven by penis, women are driven by brains. That's just the reality of it. And
it's easy.
Yes, absolutely. I accept that physiological truth. Now, the sustainability, that's the initial attraction, is always probably visual. What grows beyond that to the sexual chemistry, that is where the intellectual engagement kind of comes into play. But unless you can get to that intellectual stuff, it's going to be just that physical stuff. So for the most part, if a man's scanning me from head to toe and starts in with compliments right away, then I'm going to know that their interest is probably going to be a physical interest, and it's probably not going to get any deeper than that. But if a man, rather than talking about my appearance initially, other than a brief, oh, you look very attractive, if they get that out and then they get on to learning more about me or introducing conversations that have some merit, value, depth, if they can engage in that, then I know that they're probably going to be on the same level that I am at and in interested in the same kind of relationship that I am looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it's what they do in the first three sentences, honestly. Three sentences. Wow. I think it's three sentences. Because if all you get in the first three sentences, you look great, man, you're high. How do you stay in that great a shape? If that's all your three sentences are, you know it's not going to go any further than that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's got pretty predictable, I think.
Yeah.
So shit. Yeah. I'm going to say I'm probably a little bit jaded on that just because I've gotten used to it.
But what do you think about hookup culture? You know what's going on now.
Yes. I don't know that I can say that I have an impartial view on that. To each their own, I definitely would never, ever, ever judge anybody else for the choices they make.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
That's how I feel. I don't.
Well, how do you feel about, because what you're saying is kind of true. I mean, it's true.
Yeah. I know.
That's kind of true.
Thank you for that. She's right.
It makes sense, no? But hookup culture have taken over our generation. And I mean, I've been to the club and I've seen what's going on there. And it's not like what you say, you know, it's just whoever, whatever, you know. And I have friends, girlfriends who say, you know, today I just want to get laid.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes. And I think, I know, actually, I would say the vast majority of people I know, both male and female, will say there are times that that's all they're interested in. That's where they are in the stage of life. They just want brief chemistry. That's mm-hmm. really all they need in that moment of their life.
It depends. I think, it depends of the moment of their life.
Yeah, in that moment of their life, they're just looking for friends with benefits, basically. It's what I would say. Friends with benefits. You might see them once, twice, three times, but you probably won't see them a fourth. Okay. That's kind of what I would call the hookup culture. Sometimes you don't even know their names, according to what I'm hearing. They don't even get names. They see somebody, they connect, and they have some passion between the two of them, and they have a great night together. And I know lots of people who do that, and they're comfortable with it, and they're happy with their lives, to each their own. I am still so deeply entrenched with how I was raised as a child that I have never been able to do that. I don't know how many times I thought I should.
But isn't it because you don't desire to do it, and your background has stopped you?
Yeah, I think so. Because in the back of my head, there are times that I thought, just try that once. Just try it once. See what it's like. You should at least once experience just a one-nighter. You should experience that just to know what that's like.
Do you manage to understand what stopped you?
Oh, it's definitely how I was raised, that for a woman, the body is kind of the temple and that it's not for sharing. And
do you think that's at the long term? Is a good thing or a bad thing? How will you? Because if you see what happened to a woman after too many sexual intercourse, it can be, even to men. Yep. I mean, it's not just like, it can be damaging for the self-esteem.
Yes.
For the soul. And it's get harder to find a stable partner. So if we put all these variables in context, mm-hmm. Is it good, this conservative point of view? Or the liberation has gone too far? Or how do you see
it? I think maybe there's a happy medium. I think my extreme is maybe a little too rigid. I'm not changing it. It's working for me, so I'm not going to change it. What I like about the way I'm approaching life in terms of I'm not wasting any man's time. I'm not out there breaking hearts. I am comfortable with my sexuality as it is and self-care and things like that. I believe that if a man does come into my life that fills that intellectual need that I have, I can't imagine the sexual experience that we will have. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I'm hopeful that that chemistry that I have not yet experienced, this, the intellectual stimulation and the physical coming together, that's got to be dynamite.
You got to hang out more in libraries and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's got to be great. In the back of my head, I'm thinking this is what I'm holding out for, is that.
So you are a monogamous.
Yeah.
Monogamous by choice.
I'm by choice. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and I would never be good at the whole dating scene. I think I, of course, I've got those dating profiles. Every now and then I get bored, or I've had a glass of red wine, and so I'm like, POF, here we go. And I get on it, and I realize I don't belong there. It's just, I can't. The idea of meeting somebody for a coffee date just seems ridiculous to me. And if I said yes to every single person that asked me for a coffee date, I could never do anything else in life. And I would be backbooked. I would have to like be tweaked.
But was the way to date for you then?
If I knew how to do that, I would be doing it now. So I don't have the answer to that. I just hope it's gonna maybe fall into my life naturally if it's supposed to. But to be very honest, I've reached a point in my life where I'm really, really comfortable with who I am. If a man comes into my life, it's a bonus. But if it never happens, that's okay too. And that's actually a huge growth point for me, because I remember there was a point just after my divorce occurred and just before I was turning 50 that I remember panicking. Oh my God, I'm going to be almost 50. No man's going to want me. I'm not going to be marketable. I was in tears, actually, the day I turned 50. All of that, I woke up in tears. I sobbed for half of my 50th birthday with all of these stereotypes that I believe were true. I truly believed that at 50, the day I turned 50, I don't know why 50 is so magical, but on that day, no man's going to want you anymore. Part of me thought that.
How do you get over that belief? Because I don't feel in the same way when I turn 50. I also say, shit, I'm 50. And I couldn't sleep one night, you know, because I may not, because I don't want to get any woman, but because it's a different thing for men. But shit, I'm 50.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm 30.
I did. Like, but that's what I did. That's totally what I did. I woke up and I cried. I had a total pity party about all the things that I thought I couldn't do that are typically reserved for younger women. So, I mean, countless things I had never experienced.
Was it hard to accept and go through and say, you know what? I'm going to enjoy my life anyway.
I had to stop. I had to logically tell myself, you can sob your day away if you want to. This is the mental dialogue I was having. You can sob your day away and probably your life away if you keep thinking like this. But you can make a change. You can make your 50s what you want them to be. Society doesn't dictate whether or not you can do those things. You dictate your own ability to do things that you think, because society's told you that you can't do, you were supposed to do when you're younger. So once my brain started having, you know, that pattern of thought, then it soon shifted to, by the end of the day, I was saying, you know what? I'm just going to own my 50s. And everything that comes into my brain that I automatically think, well, I'm too old for that, I'm going to choose to set that side of thinking, and I'm going to do that thing to show that it can be done in your 50s.
So is there when you decide to do nude photography?
Yeah. The nudes were a huge thing for me. So that
I mean, yep. Now that you tell me a little bit of your story, and I catch your background, and I kind of understand what is your journey in the conservative, you know, in the modern world, but doing nude
that was
nude
kind
photos
of by accident.
Is like,
that's a big stretch, right?
It's like, wow.
Yeah, it's a flip, and it was a flip. The whole thing was a total flip in thinking. So the modeling thing was a total accident. After I turned 50, I sold my property in Ontario. And I packed up my Jeep and my dogs, and I started driving. I was going to BC. I didn't know anybody in BC. I didn't have a job there. I didn't have a place to stay. I was just going to BC, and I was never coming back to Ontario. That was what I had decided. I was going to start living my life doing all the things that I'd never had a chance to do. As part of owning my 50s, I was going to explore the world in a way that I never had a chance to when I was a kid or a young adult.
So what are you, sorry I interrupted you, but I kind of want to ask you this. Did you have regrets once you get 50s? Like, did you feel the regrets or you felt like you lived properly?
Going up to my 50s, I wasn't living. For most of my life was waking up, going to work, caring for my children. There was no actual life. I didn't do vacations with my children like I should have. I didn't do exploring, going to traveling. I didn't socialize most of my adult life. there was basically my home was my life.
So when you were married, you didn't work?
I worked part-time nights and weekends in addition to caring for the children.
Okay. So you turned 15, you say, you know what, now fuck this, I gonna do whatever I haven't done.
Yep. At 50, I thought, no, I'm going to start doing the things that I should have done when I was younger. As they occurred to me. It wasn't like I'm going to do, you know, I didn't have a list of things. It was as life unfolded after that day, things just kind of fell in place. So, for example, in Ontario, there was a point in time when I had a job change in Ontario, and the housing market was hot where I was living. It was an ideal time to sell and make a profit from the sale of the property. And my kids were fledged by then. So I decided, you know what? I've got no reason to stay in Ontario. This is my opportunity to do some of that traveling that I never did when I was young. Wow. And so that's what I did. So I drove across the US and into BC. I had an accident though on the way. And I ended up with some broken bones when I returned back into the country.
Part of the journey.
It was just part of the journey. And I was basically sedentary for the entire recovery.
Yeah,
and I gained weight, a lot of weight, which makes sense because you're not doing anything. COVID was in that period. It was just, it was kind of crazy. So when I finally took the cast off and thought, okay, I got to get back to life. And they were not doing any kind of physio at the time. All the hospitals and rehab centers were closed. So they basically said, watch YouTube videos and give yourself your own physio. So that's what I did. BC is a great place for that.
Okay. You know what? There is nothing. Just watch YouTube video and fix yourself.
That's exactly what they said. So I did. And when I got a lot of the weight off, after that, I don't know what prompted me to consider doing a photo shoot, but I reached out to someone and I said, hey, I'm curious about whether or not women in their 50s are marketable in terms of mature models. I'm just curious, can we talk about it? And the conversation happened and then the photographer said, let's shoot. So I said, okay. Let's shoot. And then I got thinking about it. And
What about the shy? When you shy?
Let's shoot. As I reached times where I wanted to do the things that I thought were reserved for younger women, it became a challenge. So it's part of that screw what society says is normal for when you try things. I have a lot of that in my head even now. If somebody tells me I'm too old to do something, in my head, I'm going, screw you. Let me show you how it gets done. That's how I do it. Literally, it's like a challenge. You could say anything to me like that, and I'm like, let's go. Let me show you how this gets done. That's how I do it. So that's kind of my mindset. And then as I was looking at my body, I realized the extra little weight that I was still carrying actually made me more curvaceous than I was prior to the accident. And so I sent the photographer an email and I said, hey, how do you feel about doing implied? I'd like to maybe capture for my own memory how shapely I was or how curvy I was. I'd like to kind of remember that. And he said, great, didn't think you would want to do that for your very first shoot, but okay, we'll try that. So we agreed to meet on a public beach in British Columbia.
A
public beach in Colombia. We kind of had to wait for people to leave. Mm-hmm. I had a beautiful silk like scarf that I could drape across me. And he gave me really great directions on how to pose. And he sent the shots back and I was blown away. I was just so blown away. And then they were posted. And after they were posted, there was a lot more interest in doing it. And so as...
Of course. I mean, one thing is to do it and have it yourself. And one thing is to do it and show it to the world.
And it was just it was so beautiful and so tasteful. My family, oh my gosh, I don't know that we want to have that because that didn't go over well. When they discovered it was very, very bad. It was actually really bad. But I was really comfortable. I had never really had an artistic side of me leading up to that. And as I became more and more involved in photography and modeling, I really loved the artistic nature of it. And I loved the marriage of the female form of nudity in nature was really my favorite thing. Just to
have
be
you ever have art in your life before?
No, this is all brand new to me. I don't think I've even stepped foot in an actual art gallery in my lifetime.
Wow.
I don't think I have. Still, I'm going to be 55 this year. No, I haven't yet. I've been to an art gallery. That sounds ridiculous, but I haven't. We'll add that to the list.
Yeah. But you are navigating to the 50s, doing nude photography, getting in touch with art.
Yes.
And also at the same time facing the conservativeness of your family. How does it feel?
Well, my family and I had basically kind of parted ways, and we had, I think, kind of jointly agreed that we didn't want to have contact with each other. It was just too dramatic, too toxic. And I have never interfered in anything they're doing. I don't watch their social media. I give them utmost privacy because to me, that's what they deserve. They're living their own lives. What they're doing is none of my business. And I feel the same way. Unfortunately, they didn't feel the same way. So when they discovered that I was doodling the modeling, they, of course, started to engage in my social media, and it was really not very pleasant. And it got to a point where I kind of had to say, enough. My social media is off limits to you. You've interfered in my life now enough to this point in time that we're reaching criminal harassment. And if you engage in my social media one more time on my business page, there will be a police complaint to address this. Because all I want is to get on with my life, and I don't want you bringing that negativity to this, because this is a beautiful thing. And they told me I was vain, full of myself, arrogant. They said, gosh, what were some things? Like lots of insults about the fact that I was displaying myself for the world to see. Just very insulting and aggressive and nasty in their messages. And there was one point in time it was so bad, I had a shoot booked, and it was for a book cover. I was so excited to do it. It was artistic nude on horseback with another model. It was my dream come true shoot, really was. And then there was something went down with my family where they invaded my privacy, and it got so ugly that it just set me so far back in my healing that I had to cancel participating in that shoot, and I missed that cover. So it was really disappointing to lose that. But I hope now that a very strong boundary has been set, that they'll just leave me alone. But
wow.
No. Yeah, so I mean, I got the nasty comments from my son. I got it from my daughter. I got it from my mother. Nasty. It's just nasty. Yeah. And so you just kind of, it's taking me some time to just kind of go, you know what?
But no. This is what you want to do. Like you.
It doesn't matter what I want to do to them.
To them. But what it's money is, as individuals, I think we have the right to do whatever we want with our life.
I feel like we should. Yes, yeah. Everybody should be able to do that without somebody trying to hold them back or judge what they do.
I think it's basic freedom. Yeah. No, it's basic freedom. But also, you can damage other people. But this damage is a little bit confusing, because you can say, okay, I will not do it because I don't want to make them feel pain. But the pain you could cause, most of the times, it can come from ignorance of not understanding
the
that
arts.
The other has the right to do whatever they want with their
life. Okay, so this is interesting. So there was a catalyst point with my daughter specifically, where I kind of had to, it was shocking, to be honest. She point blank sent me a message, or told me, after my husband and I recent separation, Mom, I expect you to remain single for the rest of your life to be available to me. That's what she said.
Sounds selfish. I'm not married to Yush.
Yeah.
I'm not married to Yush. Okay.
I was blown away. I just kind of went, I'm supposed to stay single and have no one. And she didn't like the fact that I was developing friendships. There was a lot of oppression. So the oppression that I heard from my youth was kind of creeping up through her. And I don't exactly know how, but she did therapy, and the therapist told her, your mom is not there for that. What your mom does on her own time is none of your business. And she stopped going to therapy immediately.
No, but how do you know they tell them? In,
like, yeah, the so that just kind of goes to show you the kind of what's going on there. So there's no value or respect for anything that I do. They don't understand the arts because I, as a mom, didn't teach them the arts. I didn't know anything about the arts. So how are they supposed to understand it? So, of course, I had to also flip it back and walk a mile in their shoes before I got my knickers in a knot and all hurt. What was it? So though they were seeing these images and they were disgusted by them because of whatever negativity was going on in their head, that's their problem, not mine at this point. My life is my own and I'm living it separate and apart from them. But I did want to take some time to walk a mile in their shoes and I tried to understand what they possibly could be thinking. So, yeah.
So how do you manage the fact that what they are is it has to do for the way you have raised them?
I had a conversation with them, and I'm glad I had this conversation. When my marriage ended in the few weeks, I guess up to 6 months after, I realized that what I had been modeling was very unhealthy for my children as a mother. I had been modeling a submissive woman who jumped every time my husband snapped his fingers to deal with any of his complaints, even if they had nothing to do with me or they weren't really my issue. If he complained about something, I got up immediately and went and dealt with them. And I hadn't set boundaries for things that I should have been setting boundaries to establish a home where they saw that a mother was being treated with the respect that she was due. When I realized that I had totally failed them on that, I cried a lot. I was embarrassed. I was horrified. Even though it was because I didn't know, it was still a mistake that I made that was going to potentially have a negative impact on my children in their future. I'm going to cry just thinking about this. So I sat them both down and I apologized. I said, I've not been a good mom. I have not been a good role model for how you should be treated. Nobody should be. No mother should be jumping up to do whatever the husband says because he's, you know, we want to keep him happy. That shouldn't be happening. And that's what I've modeled to you for your life is that I should be that mom and that you should be like that too. That's what parents, that's what I've shown you that moms do. And that's terrible. That's not how you should be. And I don't know how to fix this. All I can do is start off by telling you is that I see that I made a mistake as a mom and I'm sorry. So I did. I had that conversation.
Wow.
Yeah.
You must be tough.
No, look at me. I'm almost in tears.
sorry. I don't laugh. I don't mean to laugh you. I don't think it's like that funny.
That was hard. I mean, no mom is perfect, but you got to, when you know you've messed up, you got to let the kids know. Because if they don't hear from me that I missed the mark on that, then how do they know anything's wrong?
Do you think that you understand, like in a deep level that,
I think they heard the words. I don't know that they can comprehend because I think when they carried on their lives after the whole family fell apart, they carried on their lives with the family members who have that kind of thinking where they expect to obey, just get up and deal with whatever's ticking me off, you know, that kind of stuff. The environment that I walked away from, they're still in. And unless they get exposed by some other people, to the kind of life that I have had the gift of being exposed to, they won't know. They could probably just be thinking, well, she's crazy.
But you didn't know, and then you realize. So there is a time of awakening, no?
Well, therapy does that.
Therapy.
Yeah, therapy and working in an office full of therapists and social workers. Because I did have that. Like every day I went to work. I worked with social workers, social psychologists. I had all kinds of mental health
support. So it helps you to...
Oh, they were great. I mean, that was the greatest journey in my life. Because, I mean, when my marriage ended, I really didn't have a great wardrobe. My husband did not. He was very controlling with money. And so I didn't have much. I was not getting nails done. I was not getting my hair done very often. For sure, I wasn't doing anything to make myself look, you know, enhanced in any way with eyelashes or whatever. None of that was occurring during the marriage. My colleague saw the simplicity of my appearance. And when he left, people started leaving clothing on my desk. And I never knew who it was to begin with. It was just pieces of clothing that were pretty and attractive and complimentary. And then it was shoes. And I think one of the last things that people dropped on my desk was some lingerie bras and panties. And it was the neatest thing because they helped me grow into a feminine, a strong woman.
It's more like meeting who you are. Like they were yeah, seeing that you.
They were helping me
to find yourself.
Bloom. They were helping me word. Bloom. Yeah, they were helping me bloom, and to this day, I don't think they will ever understand how grateful I was for that. Yeah, they helped me bloom. Yep.
Wow. Well, I it's hard for me to think that in Canada, in a very modern society, progressive, liberal, whatever, there is these stories that are proper. I mean, the media and everything put it on the South, on undeveloped societies like Mexico.
But they won't hear unless you have somebody like me who had a profound change in life, came out, and then is ready to share with the world their journey as openly as I'm doing it, with nudes and all. How would anybody know that we exist if it isn't for people like me that actually kind of tell their stories and, you know, however they want to do that.
In podcasts.
Yeah. We tell our stories through photo shoots and things like that. And I mean, the photo shoots are really rewarding for me in so many ways. And I don't know what I want to do with that. For me right now, it's art. Sometimes I think I would like to do more with it. And then other times I don't know. But because I'm so new in Mexico, I'm still in the adjustment period here. And I think in a few more months, I will start to really focus on what are my next steps. Mm-hmm. Right now.
You're acclimatizing to the environment.
Perfect statement. Thank you.
Wow. It's very interesting, all the things you have to say. I think it's very enlightening. Like, it's very, even it's an educational thing, you know?
Well, even to other women. Like, mm-hmm. I think about part of what I'm doing with this. A lot of women, when they reach their 50s, that 50th birthday I told you about where I had a pity party, mm-hmm. A lot of women go through that, and they do it alone. They don't tell anybody. And so part of the reason I wanted to come out and talk about that, too, was to help other women go, yeah, okay, that's kind of what I'm facing. And, you know, if they wake up any given on their 50th birthday and they're kind of feeling like that little pity party is happening, at least they'll kind of know that if they want to look for something a little light that day, they can kind of go back and they can look at my page and say, you know what? No. That 50 is just kind of a beginning of a new stage in your life.
The golden era.
It is. And I mean, one of the biggest things, we're talking about, you know, my aging and how that my aging impacts me. Of course, I am aging. It does show in my body. I don't have a body of a 20-year-old anymore. Nor am I really trying to have that. I'm good with it. My hair is natural.
Wow.
And I'm not changing it. So owning in that and accepting that your skin is changing and you're getting jowls and all that great stuff, most of the time I'm good with that. But there are times when I have to go, wow, okay.
Because people treat you differently. I mean, you watch the way people treat you when you were younger and
yes.
getting old.
Well, and especially with the aging. So, but there's times when I've been really tested on how well I do confidence-wise. So for example, one of the times that I really had to do a reality check and focus on working on my self-confidence was when I did my first shoot with another model,
mm-hmm.
the first artistic nude with another model. And I had seen pictures of her. I was perplexed by the fact that I was even being asked to work with this model because she's 20 years my junior. And I arrived to the shoot and we trek into the shoot location and we strip down and we're getting ready first pose. And I look at her and I was nervous before that, but I look at her and we're touching already in the very first shot. I'm shaking. I'm so nervous. I'm shaking.
Have you ever felt another body of a woman close to you?
I've never touched another woman. In my life, I've never touched another woman. Here I am doing this photo shoot.
At
53, I think I was 53. I'm doing a photo shoot. Never touched another woman. Here, we're We are naked in the wilderness and I'm touching this woman. And then, of course, your eyes kind of naturally, you check out what the other model looks like. She's drop dead gorgeous, perfect body. She's, you know, works out. It's all toned. Everything about her is beautiful youth. And then I kind of go, okay, and you're not. You're really not. And I recall one photographer having said something to me, and I don't think he meant it kindly, but that it was almost cruel to have me shoot with a mod, that particular model in particular, because she's just so good and talented, that to have somebody like me who is really a very novice model shoot with her is almost cruel to me, is the way it was said to me. Anyway, so I was shaking, she could feel me shaking, and I thought, nope, you know what? This is all about self-confidence, and this is something I can choose to own. So I said, okay, wait, we got to stop for a sec. I got to just disclose to you. I am so nervous that I'm shaking. I'm hyper aware of my aging body compared to hers. I'm absorbing it. I'm vocalizing it to you. Now I'm tossing it out of my head. Let's get this done. And I owned it. And it showed in the rest of the images that happened after that. But it was a reality check. And I think it's one of the bravest things a mature woman can do now, is to stand beside a youthful model with a perfect body. If you can do that and have pictures taken, kudos.
Wow, you are really owning the...
It was
more choices. Like dealing with reality, you know? It's like we have to deal with reality that's old.
That's my reality, yeah.
Like, shit. I get scared. Actually, I don't want to get old. I guess it frees me, but the years pass.
Well, and you know what's weird about that? I never thought about getting old when I was young. Never occurred to me. And as my 50s have progressed, it's been weird because there's a lot of physiological changes that a woman goes through.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's menopause that is part of that. Your skin changes, it becomes thinner. Menopause changes your ability to retain information, memory, things like that. It impacts your emotional response to things. It's a real journey. In terms of your body weight and things like that, even the muscle tone. My muscle tone has changed so much in 12 months, it's shocking how much has changed in 12 months. That's part of the aging process. That 50s windows, big changes. Not like, I mean, you get to 40 and you can't see. Poor baby. Wait till you get to your 50s, because that whole time is all about changes in your body that really tell you, okay, I'm now in the second half of my life. And you have to accept that. And you have to find a way to just go with it, own it, and have it not get you down. And it gets you down if you reminisce about your young self. But if you own it and keep doing the things that your young self would have done, then your future self's probably going to thank you. So yeah, so that's a reality check. Because I mean, I'm human. And I mean, I'm not always 100% confident, but I've learned that just saying I'm struggling right now, and this is why I'm struggling. Just give me a minute to breathe. Just give me a minute to do, you know, my self-check, step it up, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to rock this out. And I did.
Wow.
So yeah, that was interesting. So women will probably go through that too, as they look around. If they have younger friends, they're for sure going to have times when it's low. One of the things that I did to, in anticipation of reaching the mid-mark of my owning my 50s, was make a post about some of the things that are kind of surprising about turning 50, and they're not always that pretty. You know, the saying about people having squirrel brains that are easily distracted? Never in my life did I know what that was like, and people really irritated me that they were like that. I have squirrel brain. It developed during menopause, and I don't know where it came from. The strangest thing ever. However, the bonus thing about that, though, somehow I have learned in my coping skills to set place markers in my brain for where I jumped off a conversation before I went squirrely.
Oh.
So I've been able to keep the place markers in my mind and rein back in that squirrel.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of adjustment that you go through and all of that.
I guess the things happen. There is more things happening to women than is happening to men.
I wonder about that, and I would love to have a conversation with a man in his 50s to compare our journeys. It would be interesting to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never had it. So So hook me up if you know a fella.
Yeah, of course, of course, of course, of course. All right, so you were saying that you're going to give us some advice.
Advice for people.
To embrace a reality.
Yeah.
The reality
for
of
youth.
Death.
For youth, I would like my youth, if I could speak to them directly, I would ask them to feel comfortable in their values and ethics that they set for themselves, to be proud of those, to own them proudly, to make choices that allow them to fulfill all the things in life that they want to live and experience without worrying as much about meeting the expectations of people in their lives. So to be more selfish in a really great way. But by doing those things, you actually bring more into your future relationships, because you bring more experience, you bring more life, not just life experience, but I would say growth comes with that experience. And confidence comes with that. So it will help you with your future relationships. But that is one of the things that's hardest to learn, is not to live your life to please other people. And you're stealing from your own life to nobody else's benefit if you actually do that. Because the person that you think you're pleasing probably doesn't really care that you're pleasing them. They probably don't think or value that you're pleasing them. They're too focused on what they have going on in their own lives. So be selfish, look after what your goals and objectives are with your own ethics and values in place. Live life now, in the moment. Don't be afraid of aging. Don't be afraid of failing. Don't be afraid of trying new things. Don't be afraid to be stupid and silly. Just be passionate in everything that you do in life. If you can, in each moment, embrace everything to the fullest extent, you will get so much more from life by doing that than you will if you just go through the stages that you think you're supposed to go through based on however you were raised or told your life should be.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing advice. I appreciate your time, Bedetu Rock.
Thank you for having me.
Lots of wisdom. It's kind of deep, you know. The fact, I mean, to think about aging and to think that we cannot change the aspect of life, to me, it's heartbreaking.
Well, it's scary. I mean, that's what you really think. And yeah. I mean, to be honest, that's the day that I woke up in tears. That's what I thought. I really believed that all of the things that I thought were meant for youth, that I would never get a chance to do. I really believed that. And that's why I was having a pity party, because I really believed it. And then as soon as I realized that's up to me to control. I don't have to worry about what society thinks. It's up to me whether or not I do those things. Yeah, wow. So that was kind of my awakening moment. So, you know, if I could turn back the clock, what would I do differently? I would own my morals and values more strongly than I did. I probably wouldn't model traditional values the way that I did.
Explore a little bit besides the wall, after the wall.
Yeah, after the traditional life is a barrier to living a full life.
That's traditional life is a barrier to living the full life.
Yes.
Okay, so we close on that. Thank you so much for being here, Bedetu Rock.
Thank you
for everything. It's a very interesting topic we have here. So yeah, thank you. Thank you guys for everything. Gracias.
Thank you.
Yeah, ciao.
Ciao. Wow.